The Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForum.com and IgnitionAPG.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefery.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefery's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefery.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 48. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring on experts in the field each week to talk a little shop. If you've not already done so, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube, as well as join the mailing list at ronmckeefery.com, so that way we make sure that you don't miss a single episode. On the website, we make sure to bring you all the show notes from each episode as well, so that you have all the links that we mention and any resources that we put out there. This week, I'm excited to have Buddy Morris with us. Buddy is the performance coach, the head performance coach for the Arizona Cardinals. He's been with the Cleveland Browns, three different stints with the University of Pittsburgh, as well as being with the University of Buffalo. And his original Coach X, he's put out a tons of great information through the years for us all to benefit from. I've had the pleasure of hearing him speak several times and think that he is just a top-notch strength coach that we can all learn from. I know you're really going to enjoy this episode, but before we do, I want to make sure that we thank EliteForum.com and IgnitionAPG.com for sponsoring Iron Game Chalk Talk and making it free for all of you. They're committed to giving back to our profession, so please take the time to say thank you when you can through their various social media sites or just by reaching out and exploring a little bit of what they have to offer. EliteForum is a sports science company based in Nebraska, and I really think their products are game changers for what we got going on. I walked through the exhibit hall at the conference and came across their product and said, this is just phenomenal what they got going on. And so I think the best thing for you to do is go to their website and learn a little bit about their company, but reach out to Skip and the group out there and just let them tell you a little bit of how they can help your current situation. And they're great. They're not going to come in. They're not going to try to sell hard or anything along those lines. They're really just going to show you what they have to offer and allow you to make decisions. But their paperless system we're using to communicate with our athletes right now, their power tracker is basically a Tendo unit at each and every rack, which provides immediate feedback with video data as well. And then their Strength Planner Lite has been a phenomenal resource for me to use, just putting workouts together so I don't have to continually go through a bunch of Excel documents and things along those lines. So I really think that if you check their products out, I think that you would find the same benefit out of them that I am. So make sure you reach out to EliteForum.com. Lastly, if you enjoy these episodes of Iron Game Chalk Talk, you'll definitely enjoy Strength-OnDemand.com. Strength on Demand is an online archive of strength and conditioning clinic presentations that Rob Taylor and myself have put together in an easy-to-use, easy-to-access website that you can get to on your time. And that's really why we created it. We were looking for the product ourselves. We're both lifelong learners and always looking for clinic tape and always trying to get better. And this was a way to do that and provide a great resource for strength and conditioning coaches. So if you haven't checked that out, make sure you check out strength-ondemand.com and find out more information about that. All right, so let's, Buddy Morris, he's a guy that is a phenomenal strength coach, and he just jumps right into it. We had some technical difficulties with this, so it is only audio. But we jumped right into it for you, so I encourage you to sit back, grab some notes. Took about 5 pages of notes through this, and I'll see you on the flip side.
If you've ever read Ralph Mann's book, Ralph Mann does a great job identifying 8 performance limiting factors that all of us possess as human beings, Ron. All of us. The degree to which those factors affect your performance is highly specific to the individual, as is everything in this world. But of those 8 factors that are performance limiters, anthropometric potential, strength potential, endurance potential, mental potential, mechanics potential, conditioning potential, and last but not least, developmental level, we control only one of them. So one out of eight, we better not screw it up, and that's the developmental level. So when you look at programming for athletes, I look at four very different points. And it's a long way to get back to your original question about programming differently for different positions. Number one, training is a long-term process. There's no shortcuts. There is no quick fix, get lucky, P90X, T25, insanity CrossFit program that's going to produce results very quickly.
Right.
Things that are produced very quickly are lost very quickly. There's no secret magic, double probation, smoking gun, mythical, magical program that exists out there. All programs work. They only work for so long. Nothing wrong. Nothing works forever.
Right.
The human body is an adaptable organism. No system in the human body works independent of the other systems. You know, for example, there's a thing called multisensory integration. This is when the body perceives stress or trouble. It gets information or filters information from every sense. Your eyes can dictate how the taste of food is.
Right.
This is things that we need to understand as strength coaches. But if you look at all these, you know, that's why I say it's a long-term process. You have to train for the long term. You got to slow cook it. Then you have to look at the bioenergetic demands of the sport. What are the bioenergetic demands of the sport? That's going to be different for every sport. Most power speed sports, Ron, are highly elastic anaerobic. Yeah. I'm sorry. So, you know, we have to pay attention to the development and the importance of the development of the aerobic system. Now, that doesn't mean getting on a treadmill for 20 minutes. You know, you have to remember bioenergetics is the flow of energy through living systems. It's those internal mechanisms that permit or allow the human body to perform external work. In the physiological of sports training, those bioenergetics characterize the nature and contribution of the human bioenergy systems towards training and competitive actions. And we can't forget that.
Right.
So we have to address the bioenergetic demands of the sport. Here's one of the real values of tempo work that I look at. And let's not look at capillary density. Let's not look at increasing, you know, like tributaries that form off a river, increasing capillary density so you slow blood flow down. Obviously, if I slow blood flow down, blood stays in contact with the tissue longer, which means I increase nutrient product transfer, waste product removal. The more importantly, I generate heat, Ron. If I generate deep heat, I decrease electrical impedance, which means I increase motor unit activations, which all those motor neurons are constantly surrounded by heat, which now causes them to adopt the characteristics of what we want, white fiber, which is power and speed and force production. But more importantly, here's why I like tempo work. First of all, it allows the athlete to learn rhythm and relaxation in a sub-maximal environment.
Mm-hmm.
So now the athlete gets to become a little forebrained. He gets to think about what he's doing. You can't do that with true speed work or true elastic power capacity development. There's not enough time. But in tempo work, I now can think about what I'm doing. Stepping toe over knee, great arm action, pocket to chin, pull the arms down and back, down, down, down. You know, when you think about sprinting, what's closer to the brain, the arms or the legs? Obviously the arms, so the arms get the signal from the brain first. That's all important for proper mechanics of the lower body action. So you look at the development of the aerobic system because it, number one, teaches relaxation. It teaches rhythm and relaxation. More importantly, again, it allows them to become a little forebrain dominant during a workout and allows them to think about what they're doing running mechanically wise in a submaximal, non-stressful, low-intense environment.
Absolutely.
So we look at the development of bioenergetic demand. Then we look at position requirements. Obviously, big guys up front, like we talked about before, are more strength dominant than by default, and the further you get away from the ball, you're less. And last but not least, you look at individual requirements. Because let's face it, we don't all respond the same to the same program. Athletes' bodies will remain very plastic their entire life, just like the human brain. If you've ever read the book, The Brain That Changed Itself, it talks about how we used to think the brain was very hardwired at the age of 18. We now know that the brain is very plastic throughout our entire life. So when you want to change something, You better slow it down. You better allow the brain to give the brain time to figure it out, and the brain better perceive it as being relevant to movement. So those are the four pillars that we look at when we program for our athletes here. Obviously, on this level, Ron, you got guys who are 22 years old. You know, Carson Palmer was in here the other day. This is a 12th year old. He has a 34-year-old man.
Right.
Are you going to train like you're a 24-year-old? Absolutely not. You know, this is what Carson and I talked about. Things are going to be a little different. We're not going to run 300-yard shuttles. I think people doing that do not understand the bioenergetic demands. And that's the NFCA's fault. Because they've shoved that down our throats since the 1980s.
Right.
300-yard shuttles. Not even relevant to the sport because we never galactic. So, why? You know, people are still telling athletes, you're lifting weights, stay after the game to clear lactic acid because lactic acid creates soreness. Lactic acid has nothing to do with soreness. The body removes lactic acid 20 minutes after cessation of the event. The reason you're sore after a game is from physical trauma, from a heightened emotional response. And I love when people say that we practice, it's not the same.
Right.
Practice and games are not the same. It's just like having a competitive match and a training match. Competitive match is obviously going to be greater because of a heightened emotional response. You don't have that training-wise. So you train off your training match. But you're sore because of tissue damage, whether it be from the eccentric component or from getting slammed into by somebody just as big and not bigger at a very high rate of speed from a heightened emotional response. Another thing I like what Cal Dietz does in his book is he's the first person I've ever read, and, you know, Cal and I talked about this back in 2001, Ron. All three of the contractions, eccentric, concentric, isometric, are patterned differently by the brain.
Right.
They all have their own circuit breaker. When are we going to figure out that a rep is not a rep? A rep is three different contractions.
That's right.
All three of those contractions should be emphasized and trained. My first block of training here is we're going to do a block of eccentric training. We're going to teach them to lower the bar. We're going to teach them to absorb force. You can only create what you absorb. And then we're going to go through a brief isometric phase, and then we'll go through dynamic movement.
Right.
But you're going to get, you know, all of our reactability from all the med ball work we do, the sprinting we do, because it's highly reactive. But when we come back in the weight room, you know, if you fill up a glass, three-quarters of that glass is filled with speed work. How much do you think of that glass is left for strength work? And that's where Charlie Francis' vertical integration periodization program is so great. Because all components are addressed at one time, the thing it varies is the volumes of work depending on what's being emphasized.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we do now, honestly, Ron, is a science. You know, I was in my office yesterday for 3 hours watching Charlie from 2007 at Edmonton series and then watching some of Dan's videos that I've had on my computer for a long time and reading an article that was written by James Smith. I just finished reading James's book, Applied Sprint Training, which I think is an outstanding book to the true development of linear speed and a true development of skill speed. Because it's easy to read, but he gives you the equation of how to do it. He gives you all the answers. And it's a great book. So, you know, we talk about books that, you know, I suggest people to read. Number one is Cal Dietz's Triphasic Training. Number two is James Smith's Applied Sprint Training. And the third, because, again, coach of physical preparation, we got to know a little bit about everything. There's a kid out there named Fred Duncan who just wrote a book called Anabolic Fat Loss. It's a great book on the nutritional component that's involved in driving the machine.
No, it's great.
So there's my three suggestions for books. And like I said, anything that Charlie Francis ever wrote, anything that Dan Pather wrote. You know, I had the chance to meet Stuart McMillan last week, too, who's another genius, and his website on speed. You know, these people all contribute to a program, a system that I've evolved over 35 years. And let's face it.
Yeah.
I hate to say we all have a philosophy. The only people that have philosophies are philosophers. We're not philosophers, Ron. We're coaches of physical preparation.
That's right.
So we have systems that have evolved over time as we learn and steal. And trust me, I steal from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've always done as a strength coach is hire people that are smarter than me. I don't want to hire dumb people that just become a bunch of mini-me's promoting me.
Right.
I want people who are smarter than me that can make me better or make me think.
That's a great point.
You know, I have Roger Kingdom here now, who's a 2-time Olympic gold medalist, because I'm picking his brain because, listen, we have to see Dan Papp, and the current world record from the United States in a 110 high hurdles is over picking Roger Kingdom's brain.
Wow.
You know, so I got him on staff. I kept a young man by the name of Peter Losey,
yep,
who is very inquisitive and wants to gain that knowledge. So in the very first thing we do in the morning is we go over what's about to be done. We go over, you know, if we see any change. Here's one thing I've always used, and you can always use this. If you go out and your guys are chattering like a bunch of old ladies at bingo, they're ready to go. if you go out on that floor, Ron, and they're just looking at you dead-eyed, and they're just not saying a fucking word, excuse my language,
right,
they're not ready for high force output, you better be able to adjust. If you can't do that, the only people that suffer are your athletes, not you. So towards the end of the week, you know, I walk out of the floor the other day, I got about 20 guys here. I looked at Pete, I looked at Roger, I said, you hear anything? They both looked at me and said, no. I said, that's exactly right. They're done. They're fried. So here's the modifications we're going to make. And then I went to very highly aerobic circulatory work, you know, and I cut out some sets on our mixed circuit training, which were in a block of, you know, correcting structural imbalances that may have occurred during the season, and instituting prehab and rehab, and really setting a big foundation of GPP work for which what more intense efforts can be built upon. But they were just, you know, kind of looking dead-eyed, and we cut things back. But by the end of the workout, through the circulatory response, everybody felt 100% better.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, you've got to be able to make those adjustments, Ron. You have to be able to.
Well, Coach, that's exactly, you know, you hit on so many points there that I wanted to, you know, I want to dive into a little bit deeper. You know, first is you're talking 3 decades of coaching, you know, that you've gone through. And you know, the thing that I've always been the most impressed with about you has been that quest for knowledge. You know, it's never stopped and it's never, you know, even diminished a little bit. And that's what the great ones. I mean, if you look across the board, that's what great people all over the world do, is they're constant lifelong learners. And, you know, my question to you is, you've been in this field now for 30 plus years. What are the things about the profession itself that you really, really like and think have come a long way? And what are the things that you're like, you know, this, I mean, you're shaking your head about?
Hey, here's what I'm shaking my head about every day. And the inability of the NFCA to correctly educate us as strength coaches or coach of physical preparation with a lot of different factors. And one of those was, you got to improve stride length and stride frequency to run faster.
Yeah.
That is so old and redundant. That's old, antiquated, and outdated. When are you going to come up and say, you know what, we were wrong, this is the truth? You have no idea the amount of knowledge that I've gained through people like Stuart McGill, Dan Path, reading Charlie Francis. And when Charlie was alive, I had the ability to develop a relationship with him. You know, I had one of the best, smartest assistants in my career in James Smith, Tommy Mazlinski, Alan DiGennaro, Mike Dango, Anthony Paroli. These guys have all educated me over and over again. You know, I've been to live surgeries. I've been to cadaver labs. I basically ask everybody questions. You know, I just stood there and watched Dan Pass work yesterday.
Mm.
And as I watched him work, there were thousands of questions that went through my mind. But at the same time, I was learning just watching the guy work, watching him and Stuart McGill work. I was learning just watching these guys, these young ladies, run. And just listening to Dan communicate with his athletes over and over again. This profession has come a long, long way. But in saying that, Ron, it's become saturated.
Agreed.
That there's too many guys.
Agreed, yeah.
You know, and what kills me with these young guys is they all think they belong on this level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you don't. You need to pay your dues first. Nothing is ever given. You got to earn things. So somebody calls you and says you're going to be a GA or an intern or volunteer intern, paid intern, you know what? You're going to have to clean up the weight room.
Yep.
You're going to have to do the things that the head guy who's earned his degree has done in his. Well, listen, when I first started in 1980, there wasn't any strength coach doctor. Think about that. So I go in my weight room, I clean my own mirrors, I vacuum my own carpet because everybody had carpet a weight room, not rubber floor. I clean my machines. You know, I wrote programs. I did the same thing at the end of the day. My first 10 years, I didn't have an assistant. It was just me alone. Kids nowadays, they couldn't do that. They become overwhelmed, you know, because everybody wants that easy way. So young strength coaches who are aspiring young strength coaches have to learn, you know, it's all about when you get an opportunity, act as if you're the head guy. That means clean up.
That's right.
Look after your athletes. Communicate. And always be on the quest for knowledge. I don't understand how people can just learn one system and say that's it.
Yep.
my system has evolved. Like I said, I spent over $200 of my own money to ship probably over 200 pounds of books out here by UPS. I've got probably six more boxes in my mother's basement that she keeps yelling at me, telling me to get them the hell out of here. And eventually, you know, when I get my first check, I will bring them out here. But the amount of information that I've collected, and I had a friend of mine, Ryan Williams, who Ryan and I wrote a book on physical preparation for American football. He gave me a Google Drive, which has so much information on it, Ron. And I had one of my computer guys come down there yesterday and show me how I could just copy instead of looking at my phone, which I was an idiot thinking that that's the only way you could do it. But now I've copied all these books and all this information. If I took a picture of my desk, you know, you'd probably be looking at your list. Sloppy son of a bitch. But remember this, when Einstein died, you couldn't even see his desk.
Yep.
People who are organized and have clean desks make me nervous. Because they don't have a lot going on in their mind. If you've had that much time to organize and clean your desk, I'm concerned about you. My desk is a freaking mess, Ron. It's got articles. It's got calendars. It's got an article from James Smith on abdominal med ball training. It has programs that we have written. It has corrective exercises for the rehab professional by Charlie Minecroft. It has Cressy and Bill Hartman and Mike Robinson's Assess and Correct on it.
Yep.
It has my new book, which I got, which I just started reading. I got it from Elite Fitness, was Dietrich Haar's book on the principles of sports training, introduction to theory and methods of training from the old GDR, the German Democratic Republic.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't even see the top of my desk of all things I've been reading and looking at. Plus, you know, communicating with our trainers on a daily basis. I'm going over to see Brett Fisher, who's a PT here. He trains a lot of guys, specifically Darrell Revis. You know, some of our guys go over there in the off season just simply because, and I can't blame them, they want to get out of the building.
Right.
So
right.
You can't blame a professional athlete for doing that. But he and I are going to meet Wednesday. But it's a constant quest for knowledge to be better than what it was the day before.
So
again, if you don't possess that as a strength coach, I think you're making a mistake.
No, agreed, 100%. Now, here's the thing that I always run into is that you get going down one rabbit hole. And another one opens up, and another one opens up, and
yep.
Like you said, you got 15 books going all at the same time with 15 different ideas. How do you organize those thoughts and really kind of maybe dive in on one, become an expert, and then move to the next?
First of all, I don't think anybody's an expert.
No, I agree.
Nobody knows everything there is to know.
Absolutely.
So obviously, I scrutinize everything I read, especially understanding that science seeks answers, training seeks results, and there's a difference. There's really a difference, Ron. I also look at deciphering the training and coaching information that I'm reading and looking at. Adapt your program to your environment, your circumstances, and to your athletes. You know, I spent a lot of time with Louis Simmons back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and you can't train left side barbell for football.
Right.
The only people who can train left side barbell are west side barbell powerlifters. Greatest thing in the world for powerlifting. But you have to look at what Louis does and listen to what Louis says and adapt it to your environment, your circumstances, your athletes. And you'd be surprised the gains that are made. More importantly, how technically sound they become. You know, everything should look like it's supposed to look. We take too much into a, you know, we just take for granted everybody knows how to bench press.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time you really saw a strength coach teach somebody how to bench press properly? Pull your feet back on you, squeeze your shoulder blades together, take your chest to the bar, don't bring the bar to your chest. Inhale, get a big gulp of air. You're your strongest when your lungs are 70% filled with their capacity. When's the last time you heard people teach that? Because they all take for granted that they know how to do it.
Right.
And they don't. You know? So again, I refer back to low risk, high rewards is going to be beneficial every single time for every athlete. Then you have to start to properly inform yourself. Look through, eradicate the dogma that has occurred in this country. There is just not one end all to be all program. It doesn't
right.
exist. Training by nature, Ron, is incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, and I've said it 1,000 times now, is all those variables we have to manipulate as coaches of physical preparation. Sets, reps, tempo, speed of contraction, exercise selection, sequence of events, whether I train horizontal or vertical loading, was I trained one set or multiple sets, and most strength coaches don't even know the difference between horizontal and vertical loading. Whether I train 3 times a week, 4 times, 5, or 6 times a week, there is not one perfect variable. They all have their own benefits. They all have their own drawbacks. Thus, there cannot exist one perfect program. So I'm always referring back to what Dan Pass says is a biomechanical truth. You know, what are the common denominators amongst all the great athletes? What are the common denominators amongst all the great coaches? You take all 10 of the Olympic sprinters that were in the Olympics this year in 100 meters, and you'll look at them. They may be all be built slightly different. Most of them are going to kind of be built the same. You know, high, tight butt,
right.
Long torso, you know, long arms, long limbs. But they all, there's a common denominator. They've all trained different to get where they are. But they're all those common denominators. The great ones, the elite ones, leave us clues. You know, elite athletes, the only way they're going to get better at their sport is to do their sport. So thus, training reverts back to becoming very general in nature. So look at what an elite sprinter does. Well, he does speed work. Oh, there's a revelation. He sprints to become better at sprinting. Now, when you're trying to ingrain proper biomechanical positions, yes, then the value of tempo now becomes into play. And you get to rehearse that at high speeds when you do actually speed work. And I would not put a sled on a kid till I ingrain proper application of sprint mechanics.
Yeah.
Which one of the best ways to do that is to do it lying on the ground. Well, Heath Feldenkrais talks about when you lay on the ground, Ron, your freedom of movement or your degrees of range of motion or freedom of movement becomes greater because the body does not have to seek stability. What are you going to do, fall? You're already on the ground. So one of the best ways I use to ingrain the proper motor pattern of speed of sprinting is just have land on one side and cast mash step toe over knee.
Mm-hmm.
And as I step toe over knee with extreme dorsiflexion, the heel of the step over foot or step over ankle aims for the toe of the ground support leg. And then when I get good at that, very slow motion, I can speed them up. Now you put them against the wall and have them push away from the wall. So now that ground support leg now begins to feel tension or pressure through the ball of the foot. You know, when you talk about sprinting, no sprinter lands direct in their center of mass.
Right.
The difference is the elite sprinter will only land about 4 to 6 inches in front of center mass, where the intermediate or beginning sprinter will land anywhere from 8 to 12 inches in front. That's a significant difference. Same thing with postural alignment. Your head should not move during a sprint. Drives me nuts when I see people in acceleration position. All of a sudden I hear somebody yell, get your head up. Don't get your head up. Allow your torso to unfold, which brings the head up, because the head doesn't move. The head dictates proper postural alignment. If you drop your chin by 1 degree or look up by 1 degree, you're going to decrease hip extension, which over 40 yards, it's going to be a tenth of a second.
Mm.
If you don't pump your arms vigorously, your hips are going to drop. So there's so many things that have to be, you have to become aware of and have to be ingrained in the system at very low so maximal work. Again, the value of tempo work. And then slowly start to increase or their speed of movement over time, which all things will take over time.
Right.
And when you look at correcting things, if you correct one thing at a time, you're going to have an 85 to 90% success rate. If you try and correct two things, that drops down to 35% wrong. If you try and correct three things, good luck. Call me and let me know how that works for you. That, you know, yeah. I see some crazy stuff out there, what people are trying to do with their athletes. And, you know, I'm not a big foot ladder fan. To me, the only thing a foot ladder does is cause you to run nowhere fast. Wow. And I just don't get why people call it a speed ladder. Plus, I've never seen those foot patterns done on a field.
Right.
Those foot patterns are specific to the ladder itself. So, like Charlie always told me a long time ago, Dan Pavas reinforced it, Stuart McMillan has reinforced it. Don't do stuff just to do it.
Right.
Don't do stuff just to take up time. So if you go back to look at the elite sprinter, okay, he sprints. He does jumps. Oh, there's another miracle. He lifts weights, and he throws med balls. Okay. There's my example. There's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him. I don't see some of the greatest sprinters in the world buying some Bosu balls. I don't see him doing a Bulgarian split squat with their foot on a half foam roller with dumbbells and a weighted vest on.
Yep.
Understand this. We still play on a solid ground. When we start playing on the ground like an electric football field or an earthquake, then I'll start doing that other stuff. If you really look into unstable type training, it decreases force and power outputs.
Right.
That's good for the beginning of rehab. That's great. But as you go throughout, it no longer benefits.
Right.
You know, it's like Charlie talks about doing a depth jump and doing a drop jump. all you have to do is go beyond what is required. If going beyond significantly what is required and it doesn't produce any more results, why the risk? Mm. Because the reward isn't going to be that great if the risk is very high.
Absolutely.
The risk, and I'm not willing to take that risk with my athletes. Are you?
No.
I'm going to look at things that have worked in the past. I'm going to stay with them. I'm going to find different ways to manipulate them. Just like, and every day, one thing I found out, Ron, if you bring your athletes together and explain to them what you're doing and why you're doing it and the physiological response that you're looking for, creates awareness. Awareness creates cognition. Cognition creates motor learning. Mm. So if you're just making people aware of things, corrects a lot of problems. I mean, if you go to bettermovement.com, that guy, Thomas Hargrove, is really ahead of his time as far as I'm concerned. As Dan Pass said, everybody's starting to regurgitate what Mohish Feldenkrais talked about years ago. I don't do a functional movement screen. I think it's a waste of time.
Right.
And I'll continue to think it's a waste of time because, number one, it's done in a slow, controlled environment. How many sporting events do you know they're done in a slow, controlled environment? Number two, just because a muscle isn't active in isolation doesn't mean it's not doing its job in a sporting activity. But more importantly, number three, do a lunge, they look great. Now start to mechanically load or stress them once things happen.
Right. Yep.
And again, change where the mechanical load is. You know, you do a lunge, put a bar on your back, put the bar over your head, put the bar in front, put the bar in a vertical club position. Use kettlebells, double arm, contralateral, ipsilateral. Use dumbbells, contralateral, ipsilateral. You know, it's different. Things are going to change. So we have integrated here a lot of static work to begin with. And I use static work for activation, corrections, and education because it ingrains into the system proper posture alignment where they should be. And just by making people aware creates a tremendous amount of improvement in their movement skills and abilities. But still, movement is the one common denominator, Ron, for all athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you are. It is the one common denominator that brings all of us together as athletes. And it is the one common denominator that you can't overlook. And most Agreed. People forget that. Most people think it's all about strength. Again, it's not all about strength. There's no professional coaching that is capable of overcoming or superseding the importance of proper biomechanical movement efficiency.
Oh, that's a great point.
Movement, as we've talked about, is the one common thread shared between all athletes and all sports. So when you look at movement, you look upon its optimization of its efficiency because now it'll benefit sports enhancement or sports advancement, but more importantly, it'll prevent injury.
Yeah.
So when you look at movement, you have to secure or ingrain that biomechanical movement efficiency. And that's, again, it's just one part of the greater whole. The sum of the parts is always greater than the whole.
Right.
Which is the objective of when James Smith and all these other guys, Dan Patch, talk about global training, load management. Because everything has to be accounted for, Ron. Everything.
You know, one of the things you've mentioned several times, and I've talked about it on the show quite a bit, of going to the innovators of a concept, you know, and you've referenced clinicking with several of the greats and experts in the field, and Dan Pfaff and James Smith, and when you've had a question, you've gone directly to the source. How much has that benefited you in your career? And what would you recommend to these young strength coaches doing if they can't have access to those guys right away?
Well, those guys have put out multiple DVDs. You can go to YouTube, and there's Dan Pfaff's whole lecture series on there. Take 15, 20 minutes a day. Close the door and turn on, listen to the guy speak. Because in one of his things, he says, don't take anything as gospel. And he's right. He talks about the evolution of his system over time. Same thing with James Smith. He just wrote the book, Applied Sprint Training. For me, and I've read Ralph Mann's book. I've read all of Charlie Francis' stuff. You know, I've read all these other speed guys. James puts it in very black and white, very simple, easy to understand terms. Plus, he gives you examples, which is great, Ron, of how he's trained for alactic power and capacity, use tempo work, power and capacity, to enhance the development and performance of these athletes, whether it be amateur or professional. And he gives, you know, from the 7s and 15s in rugby, from soccer to an NFL quarterback who's been in the league for a long time, from his time at Pitt with the skill guys. You know, one of the things James and I did at Pitt is, again, I made him responsible for skill guys.
Right.
The said, these guys are yours, program for them. The only thing I'm asking you to do is run the program by me and allow me to justify it. But again, we're basically on the same page with almost everything. You know, the only thing we probably weren't on the same page with is James doesn't like chains and bands, and I do. So, you know, I also look at what Charlie Francis said between high and low CNS stressors. You can have a high CNS stressor on a low CNS day, Ron, as long as that exposure to that high CNSer is very short or very brief in nature. All it's going to do is maintain that high CNS stimulus.
Right.
So, you know, after game day, my big guys would always do dynamic effort bench, which the percents were lighting up between 40 and 60%, which is recovery and restoration for big guys. But, you know, they overcame the accommodating resistance. It was a little bit of stimulus through speed, but it was a very, very brief exposure because if you look at the activity, it's only 35% recruitment of all motor units. So, number one, I go on YouTube and look at all James Smith. That has a bunch of stuff on there. Dan Path. You can go to charliefrancis.net or charliefrancis.com, which is what I did, and ordered everything Charlie ever did. Every one of his DVDs on my computer, and I still watch them religiously over and over again because the guy pretty much had it figured out.
Yeah, he's a genius.
And I have all of his written material. And just read it and then look at how you can apply it to your athletes. And understand, right. You know, you can't train your freshmen like you train your older guys.
Mm-hmm.
You can't train older guys in this league like you train your younger guys. It's just not going to work. These guys all on this level have a long history of injury. And if you really look at it, Ron, some of these guys, when you're your fifth year in the league, people say, oh, I've been in the league 5 years. Well, that doesn't include the 3 to 5 years in college. That doesn't include the 4 years in high school. That doesn't include the 3 years in junior high.
Right.
Where continuous physical trauma and contact, because this truly is a collision sport. So that's my suggestion to those young guys. The books are out there. The information is out there.
Yep.
As much as I don't like the computer, there are some good things on a computer, but you know, everybody's a computer guru now, internet guru. There's more gurus on the internet than I've ever seen in my entire life.
You're
right. Just have to know who to really trust and go to.
You have to look through
all that injury, all that information. Like I said, scrutinize your mentor, scrutinize the information you're looking at, scrutinize and question everything, and continually read. If you do that, you'd be surprised how your mind, and never take a closed mind.
Absolutely.
Never close your mind off to say, this is the only way.
Absolutely.
This is what I did when I was growing up. Well, I don't care. You know, a lot of things I did when I was growing up just got me into trouble now as I'm older. So obviously, it wasn't right.
That's right. That's right. Well, Coach, I got about a million other questions for you, but I got one more for you because I know it's you know, taking up a Sunday from me, and I hate doing that. But
I ain't got nothing to do today. I've already been to the gym. You know, I got this goddamn psoriatic arthritis. I could barely grip with my left wrist, so training was there's more pain than anything. Again, at our age, you know, well, I'm 56 now, but at my age, training becomes now a process of elimination of what don't hurt you for the day.
Right? That's right.
You know, if it don't hurt, go ahead and do it. If it hurts, find something else to do.
But you know, you know, we're both taking on new roles, and you're taking on a role there in Arizona where, you know, it's you're having to create the culture in which you want it, you know. And so talk a little bit about, you know, how you go about establishing an accountability structure, a buy-in from your athletes, you know, because, you know, Tommy Moffitt, you know, I said it best is, and actually, it was a high school coach that gave it to him, but, you know, he said that your athletes never love it as much as you do, you know, and obviously you're passionate about it. I'm passionate about it. But, you know, there's going to be an athlete that doesn't love it nearly as much as you do. How do you reach that guy at both the college level and even the NFL level?
I think, you know, those circumstances are going to present themselves. In a college level, you probably have more control over it.
Absolutely.
On this level, you really don't. So an open line of communication with your athletes is imperative.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I ask my athletes how they feel. You know, I've looked at bringing the catapult system in, and I've looked at collecting all the data like everybody's starting to do. And though I believe in that, I'm interested in it, I want to see. Here's the only problem I have with it. You'll get some of these knuckleheads that'll go out and spend 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning partying just to come in to have a shitty readout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number two, if you rely too much on data, Ron, I'm a firm believer, you become like the drunk that relies on a lamppost. You can't move on. You can't move on without it. So you can't see the forest through the trees. I think it's important, and I want to look at it, and I want to be able to go back in time to see how people respond. I want to be able to establish limits. You know, okay, this is Larry Fitzgerald. This is 11th year in the league. This is the maximum amount of galactic work he can do before, when he crosses over this threshold, he starts to begin to have issues and problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's important, but there's still days, you know, when you don't feel very good that you still got to go.
Right.
And that's one thing. I've measured my heart rate for 3 years now. There are days where I felt like shit and went in and had some of the, my heart rate said I felt like shit, and I've gone in and had some of the greatest workouts ever.
Mm-hmm.
There are days when it said take the day off, I went in and trained anyway and just wound up getting injured. So there's a give and take between all of it. Like I said before, I don't think there's anything ever going to be anything that's perfect. It could tell you how an athlete's going to respond to a stimulus, because what the body says and how they react from a mental standpoint are going to be two different things at times.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be days when they got to, like, you know, Mel Shipp once said, they got to still train in a chaotic environment to expect that chaos. They're going to have to line up and go when they don't feel very good. You've always seen on TV, so-and-so had the flu the last 24 hours as he's lining up and playing.
Yep.
You know, and there's some days you just got to go when you don't feel that good. So I think that you have to train. But I also think, going back, that adjustments must be made to accommodate the athlete when they're not doing that well in training. Game day is a whole different situation. You know that, and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a constant open line of communication is always going to be valuable, especially with athletes on this level. You know, these are grown men. This is what they do for a living. You know, this is how they make their money. This is how they feed their family. So in college, I'm a little more suspect. There's only a few guys I would ever trust to look at and say, how you feel for today?
Sure.
So in college, you know, and again, you always watch your athletes. If you're doing speed work or there's more increased ground contact time, you see their hips start to drop, it's time to shut it down. If they set a personal record, it's time to shut it down.
Yep.
Move on to something else. If I can't do what I have on paper, then try and make it up in some other area of the training day. You know, but I think it's monitoring and looking at your athletes on a daily basis, maintaining a constant line of communication. Eric Corum does a great job at that at University of Kentucky. I mean, Tommy does a great job at Jacksonville. But again, you look at how scientific that they've become, and it still hasn't produced more wins.
Mm.
You still got to have playmakers on.
That's right.
The most important criteria and most overlooked is still the ability to play the game.
Genetics.
You got to have playmakers.
No doubt.
If you don't have playmakers, I don't care how scientific you get, it ain't gonna work.
I agree.
You know, you get rid of Cam Newton from the Carolina Panthers, they're in a whole world of hurt.
Yep.
Think about that. You know, you got that one guy who's your playmaker. You know, Kaepernick in San Francisco.
Yep.
Russell Wilson in Seattle. Those guys, you lose those guys and things happen very drastically.
Makes a big difference.
You know, so, like I said, there's nothing perfect in this world. No program is perfect. It's understanding that you have to be able to adjust on the fly. It's understanding that you've got to continue to learn and educate yourself. And you have to truly understand the process of obtaining sports mastery, which is hard enough in itself.
Right.
Okay? So I've always looked at that risk-reward benefit. If the process of attaining sports mastery is that difficult, why do I want to introduce things to the human body that are going to be even more highly technical? You know, you can't profoundly confuse the body. You can't stress it from every different level. There has to be a balance in your programming. I think when you find that balance and you create that balance, your athletes just benefit. When they're done training, they should look at you and say, I feel good.
Yep.
They should never look at you with their tongues hanging on the ground. You know, unfortunately, in this country, everybody judges the greatness of a program by, oh, did he throw up today? Or, you know, am I sore from the day before? And that's how people judge programs. And unfortunately, head coaches are just to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's hard, you know, because they think you create toughness and making guys throw up. I was with a head coach that said, they're not training hard, they're not throwing up. I said, throwing up is just a maladaptation to training. It's giving the athlete something he was not ready for. It doesn't take a genius to train somebody in your depth or train somebody to make them throw up. That's not a thought process. That's just giving them things they weren't prepared for. Your blend, your from week to week should be a smooth transition, what we call bleeding into the next level or the next block. And it should bleed smoothly flexible programming.
That's fantastic, Coach. Well, Coach, as a guy that's heard you speak several times and read most of your works, I truly appreciate the impact that you've had on my career and you know, the careers of others and the contribution to the field. And I just really appreciate you spending part of your Sunday with us and sharing your information with everybody. Is there anything that you...
It was an honor for me to talk with you and an honor for me to do it, Ron. It really was.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, guys, a couple quick things before we let you go. Don't forget to check out eliteform.com or ignitionapg.com and let them know how much we appreciate them bringing this show to us for free. It was awesome to have Coach Buddy Morris on the show today. Please join me in the comments section at ronmckeefrey.com thanking Coach Morris for coming on the show and sharing his info with us. All the show notes for this episode and the others with links that were mentioned are on the site as well. While you're there, join the mailing list so that you get updates on new shows and anything else that I have going on. If you haven't checked out strength-ondemand.com yet, make sure to do so. It's a fantastic resource, and I know you're going to love it. Lastly, please subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube, as well as leave a positive rating and review so that we can continue to bring this show to as many strength coaches as possible. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Take care.